Let's resume. One of the questions I got during the break was, these garbage collection techniques seem like they oftentimes need you to stop your process, your program, as it's running. And that seems like a bad thing. One of the things I want to point out to you, unless you have very specialized programs, it happens anyway. All computers, be they mainframes or desktops or laptops or even the smartphone type things, essentially are what's called multi-programmed. What that means is that you have more programs running simultaneously than you have processors. And a way to see that is if you're on a machine right now, there's always a utility, it's called the activity monitor or something like it, that will show you at this instant all the programs that are running. So if you're looking at something now, you're not only seeing essentially an image of the screen I'm showing, but you, for example, may have a clock up there, and something's updating that clock. As you look at it, the numbers change or little arms move. You may have something in the old days, I remember, they used to have, when mail came in, there used to be a thing, there would be a little mailbox, and the little flag would go up. And, of course, if you were at AOL, what would happen when the little flag went up? You have mail. And there's any number of people in the old days, maybe your parents or maybe when you were a young child, you know, you have mail, and oh, my God, I got mail. Now, you know, you have mail, you know, it's like saying you have garbage because most of it is garbage. So at any rate, most of your programs, and actually go on, what happens is the processor is so fast that it essentially allocates time on a round-robin basis. So it's rather much like having three or four people who all want to use, say, the kitchen. So you'd say, you know, you get the kitchen for the next half hour, and then you for another half hour, and so on. But of course, it's not a half hour. It's some number of milliseconds. So your program gets a couple of milliseconds, then yours, and yours, and yours, and it cycles around. That being the case, the program's being stopped anyway. So when it's being stopped, particularly if you have a multiprocessor, these days, even if you have more than one processor, you typically have more processes, that is running programs or running tasks, than you have processors. But you can imagine while the main process is stopped, you can have another processor examining, for example, here, for what's garbage and what's not, and doing some of the bookkeeping required here to actually move objects for compaction. So what's happened here is, let's assume the process has been stopped. It goes through and finds all the live objects, and again, shoots through memory. But now when it finds a gap, let's go back to what we saw previously. Here we have a gap. So it says, okay, object one's fine. It's at the left end, assuming we're going left to right. It says, hey, that's garbage. What we want to do is have the garbage area be pushed to the right. So essentially what would happen is, since it's garbage, object three could be moved over to be adjacent to object one. And then later when we find object five, adjacent to object three. Getting something like that. The advantage of that, obviously, it takes longer, but now the advantage is that all the free space has been merged together. So now I can allocate as much space as I have up to and including the limit based on how much space there is there. So compaction is something that is very useful. But again, it's most important if you're doing that, that you be able to distinguish pointers and non-pointers. The reason is, if something's a valid pointer, it can certainly be changed if the location of the object also changes. But if you mistake something as a pointer and it's really an integer, and you change its value, you've got a subtle bug, namely a value that has nothing to do with pointers may be mistaken as a pointer and therefore changed. And that turns out to be dangerous. Again, that's one of the liabilities of being in a C-like land, where pointers and non-pointers are not always easy to distinguish. So that is mark and sweep, and that, interestingly enough, was invented way, way back in the early 60s into the 70s, when people were first worrying about dynamically allocating objects and how to do it. And this persisted for some while. For a long while, this was the standard garbage technique approach. That's no longer the case, and I want to talk about two of them quickly that have superseded it. One of those is a copying collector. And the notion here is, when should somebody do garbage collection? Notice if you have something where there's very little garbage, there's very little need for garbage collection. And it's very situation here that if you're all very neat, I guess Judy could lay off all the housekeeping staff they have here. I guess you must not all be neat, because every time I walk around, there are plenty of people cleaning and mopping and shining and everything else and situation. And certainly, this place is kept as nice as any public building I've ever been in. At the university, for example, my garbage gets emptied once a week. And gosh, help me if I put anything in the garbage that starts to smell in less than once a week. So you have something that's going to go bad in summer or something, I can get a little surprised if I come in there, because it doesn't get garbage collected in the old sense of the word very often. Why? Well, you know, we're a public institution, and they're always looking to save money by cutting back on what they consider non-essentials, like keeping the place clean and neat and sanitary. Not so here, and I think that's one of the nice things you have here. But what we might want to do is have a notion that says, well, wait a minute, we really need garbage collection when there's a lot of garbage. But what we're doing here, as I showed you, is removing and essentially looking at all the garbage, just if only to move it and compact it. So what we're going to do instead is having something called a copying collector that only worries about non-garbage items. The notion is, if something is non-garbage, we're going to protect it. But anything that's not considered non-garbage is never touched. And I'll show you why and show you how. It sounds kind of odd, but again, it's easier if we have a picture. So what we do now is we create two areas called the from space, where we allocate space from, and the to space, where we're going to move things to. Initially, we'll assume it's 50-50. It doesn't have to be. Notice that we needed something like the to space even when we were doing the mark and sweep, because as you're moving things around, you may need some temporary locations to copy things while they're being merged together. So in this particular case, very similar to what we had before, but in this particular case, what's going to happen is I'm going to trace live objects. Dead objects, by definition, are not accessible, and therefore I will not pay a price. So here, this looks like 50-50 or so, but this would be most advantageous when there's lots and lots of shaded spots and comparatively few live objects. That means, you know, the live objects are the ones I protect. So in this particular case, I see that 1 and 3, and then from 5 through 3 are live. So what I'll do is I'll start moving live objects from the from space to the to space. So object 1 I saw, object 3 I moved over, and object 5 I see there's a reference, so I go ahead and eventually move it, getting the thing at the bottom area. But notice I paid attention only to live objects. All those dark guys there that were dead, I've never looked at them, I've never touched them, whatever. And when I'm all done and moving all the live objects, essentially the top area is completely unused. All the good stuff has been moved down. And in this particular case, I can simply invert the function of the from and to space and now start allocating space from the bottom half using the top space to copy back live objects when it becomes appropriate. So if I'm in an environment where most things become garbage quickly and only a few things stay live, this is great, because the price paid is essentially proportional only to the live objects. And again, it kind of makes sense that if I don't have lots of garbage being generated, I really don't need a high-performance garbage collector anyway. So this sort of thing will work out well. As slides will say, by the way, it doesn't have to be 50 and 50. You could do something like two-thirds as one area and one-third the other, as long as it's the case that generally the number of live objects is a smaller fraction than the number of dead objects. See if I have a picture of that. Yeah, so in this particular case, I don't have a picture. But essentially what you imagine here having there would be three-thirds instead of two-halves. And what you would do essentially here is start filling. So this and this are both treated as from. So now I have two-thirds of my memory available. But remember, the assumption is there's lots of garbage and not much non-garbage. So when this thing starts filling up, as long as it's the case that the live objects represent one-third of the space, I can move the live stuff here and then reuse this live plus this as allocated space using that one as my eventual target. So you can actually do it not just 50-50. It's easier to visualize that way, but it doesn't have to be. So the nice thing about doing this is, particularly if you have large virtual memories, is the fact that you can make fairly large segments as long as it's the case that the activity for both paging and caching is in the currently live area. And the other areas, which will be targeted later, are essentially just there for the point when I do garbage collection. So the copying collectors now are very popular, and most Java systems have available a copying collector if you want it. One last one I'll touch base on, and then we'll be done. And what's happening is I sort of tied myself to an assumption, namely that most objects allocated are garbage quickly. What if it's the case that I have lots of garbage, but I have other objects that turn out to be long-lived? You can imagine what happens here is I have a central data structure that I build early on, and it doesn't change too much, but then I have lots of other computations that are generating garbage and so on. So it was invented as sort of an improvement. Let me go back to... Go back to my slides, called generational. That'll assume among live objects, we'll have two or more classes. And this was always kind of, I've always found it kind of interesting to study, because what they did is they distinguished between objects that are going to last for a long time and objects which will probably not last a long time. And since many of the people doing this were academics, they used sort of an academic parlance. The guys that were long-lived and were around forever were called tenured. And you can guess where the name tenured came from. And these are the folks that are around for literally decades. And there are other folks at an institution like university that come and go fairly quickly, namely the students. There are a few students who like to stay a long time, but typically you spend your 4 or 5 years or whatever it is, goes all too quickly if you enjoy yourself, and then you have to go out into the real world and earn money to pay back all the student loans that you had while you were a student. But what happens here is that it's possible to notice that live objects have been live for a long time. The way you do this is we do essentially what I showed you before, the copying collectors, and we essentially mark the objects with how many times they've been copied back and forth. That's just another little field. So you say, hey, you were alive this last iteration, and the one before that, and the one before that, and one before that, and the one before that. I'm going to make an assumption. Namely, you're going to be around a long, long time. That's like the old tenured professor who never, ever leaves. They got a sweet job, and they're not about to rock the boat until, you know, at some time, retirement becomes an option. So these guys get put in their own separate area, and they don't get checked very often, because if they've been around for 100 or 200 or 1,000 cycles, they're likely to be around for one more and two more and three more. They have to be checked occasionally, because occasionally one of these old tenure guys actually retires or drops dead or gets kicked out for stealing whatever or doing naughty things or whatever it might happen to be. So what happens now is we have this notion of generations. And again, it can be gone to many generations, but we'll assume we have an old generation and a young generation. And now what we do is we do copying collectors where we search through the old generation only infrequently. That means they're likely to stay around a long time. If they become garbage, we won't notice it for a while. And then we'll have a larger space for objects which may last for a while, but not for a huge while, and they get checked more often. And guess what? They have their own little counters too. So eventually, if some assistant professor, you know, stays long enough, they become what's called an associate professor. Stay long enough, you become a full professor, and then finally, you get to the end of the line and you become an emeritus professor. And after that, you become an RIP professor, but that's not something we look into, or look forward to, I should say. So what generation techniques do is give you the best of both worlds. They say, yes, you can have an application that has objects that are long-lived, and we won't pay much for them because we'll only examine them infrequently, maybe every 10th garbage collection cycle. We'll have a bigger area for objects that last a while, but not too long, and they'll be garbage collected fairly promptly, and a few objects that tend to last a long time will be moved, tenured, as it were, up to the older generation. And again, occasionally, the older generation will have something that becomes garbage because no longer anybody points to it, and it gets collected. So generational techniques are now kind of the state of the art. because they have the property that they don't pay any price for garbage. It's only for live objects. And among live objects, those objects which haven't proven themselves by lasting many cycles get checked frequently because they may go to garbage pretty quickly. But objects that have been around for a long time are likely to stay around for a longer still time, and therefore they're in the older generation and checked only infrequently. But that means they don't cost you much because you're not checking them very often. They're taking up their space and are likely to continue so. So it's kind of a nice balance between getting stuff that is garbage recognized quickly and cleared out, and letting live objects, which are going to stay for a long time, not have the overhead of getting checked again and again and again. Sort of, you know, sort of like the janitor knocking on your door. Professor X, are you still alive? Yeah, I'm still alive. Okay, we'll see you next week for collecting the garbage in your garbage bin. And that is generation technique. And there's one last one I want to talk about because that's such a cool idea. And this is a situation where what can you do in a language that makes it hard to distinguish between pointers and references, addresses? It seems like you can't do anything, but there is. And conservative garbage collectors can actually be put in C and C++, both of which allow you to change a pointer into an integer and an integer into a pointer. And essentially what they do is they say, we're not going to care about whether or not the C language thinks this thing is an integer or a pointer, because it lies, or not lies, but doesn't keep the thing straight. So what we'll simply do is we'll put our heaps way up on the high end of memory with really big addresses. So it's either a 32-bit address or maybe even a 64-bit address. And we'll assume that any value we see that points to the heap area is an address. If it's a real address, fine and dandy. If it's an integer that just happens to look like an address, we're going to assume it's address anyway. Why do we do that? Well, if that's the case, that means that the worst thing that can happen is we can miss something that's garbage because it may be an address a million, and you happen to have an integer named a million that you interpret as possibly an address. But most integers tend to be fairly small, and they're going to be at the low end of, they would be at the low end where they can't be into heap memory. That being the case, ordinary integers, which are fairly small, will not be misinterpreted as pointers into the heap. And it's called conservative because if you're not sure, you just simply go ahead and make the conservative choice. Namely, if I don't collect something, that's not so bad. I lose a little bit of garbage. If I don't lose too much, I'm fine. But if I collect something that shouldn't have been collected, I may destroy the program because data I needed to have is gone. So these were not invented originally, but everybody loves C and C++ and said, gosh, I wish I had garbage collector. And the odd thing is that there have been many applications where people in the application have hand-coded their own memory management. They decided, I know exactly what this program is doing, and I know when this guy's going to be garbage, I know when that guy's going to be garbage, and I know when that guy's going to be garbage. And they went ahead and tested how fast that thing ran and how well it did in terms of memory. And then they took an equal version of it without the memory management, replacing it with the conservative garbage collection. And they found in almost all cases, it ran just about as well. That is, hand coding and so on versus this conservative didn't make a big difference. Occasionally it would, but not a huge difference. So the upshot is in C, you can actually go in there and put in this conservative garbage collector, also C++, and have the advantage of garbage collection for the most part without changing the language. And I thought it was pretty cool because it's amazing how clever people can be when they really want something like garbage collection and they're stuck with a particular environment. So, you know, so it's just something. And again, there's some details here and there in the notes, and you can read through there. I won't be asking really anything in depth on garbage collection in the exam, so not everybody said, oh, now he tells me. But in a situation, I didn't have a heck of a lot of time, and I wanted to give you a flavor, because I really believe garbage collection is a technique which is here to stay. And you know, maybe someday the son or daughter of Cachet will have garbage collection, and you'll know a little bit about how it all works. So any questions on that? Okay, let's see how we did on time. Hey, good deal. We're getting out of here about 8 minutes early. So, I'll remind you, next week, our final lecture, it's back upstairs. It's only during April we were sent down here so that the paying customers would not see that we exist. I guess we scare away paying customers or whatever. But the last one will be upstairs in Beatles, and The way we'll do office hours is if it's the month of April, office hours are here. If it's the month of May, we'll be upstairs again.